to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Moderator ID accepted. All guests are currently unmuted. To mute all guests, press pound pound. For help with host options, press star 0. You will now be connected with the conference.
We want FIBO to be as reusable as possible, but also to leverage other ontologies. So FIBO will not reinvent the wheel, but FIBO will import and include many other ontologies that are evolving, some that we've included already, such as the ISO country code standards and other standards as well will be embedded in FIBO. And so we will be looking to other industries to provide some other common ontologies, as well as to the OMG, to the W3C, et cetera. Item number three, we will operationally use FIBO in the example I mentioned a bit earlier to categorize and classify undifferentiated and undefined financial instruments into the FIBO taxonomy. So even if an instrument is tagged, what we want to do is put it through the FIBO colander to harmonize it. And if it is not something that fulfills or is classified as some of the base FIBO classifications for types of contracts, it's going to basically fall through that colander and be identified and flagged so that we can look at this information and see, is it something very exotic that we haven't even yet defined in FIBO but valid? Or is it something totally new that's not yet defined as a standard and therefore needs to go through a standardization process? Or is something highly suspect? So classification gives us that capability. On item number four, FIBO also provides a Rosetta Stone for mapping and linkage to other taxonomies. So, for example, there's another organization called the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, ISDA for short, and they're coming up or have come up with a different taxonomy of the instrument. So they may have some slightly different terminology than FIBO. So what FIBO wants is the interoperability, because again, what's more important is the DNA of a credit default swap, or the DNA or the chemical composition of a fixed float interest rate swap, that we understand its molecular structure. It is what it is. It's unchangeable. It doesn't matter necessarily what it's called. So FIBO will have a terminology for that thing in itself, as would ISDA have a terminology for the thing in itself, but FIBO will provide that mapping. So if someone queries FIBO using the ISDA terminology for that credit default swap, we'll provide that automated mapping so that we have as much interoperability as we can. On item number five, FIBO using semantic web technology will provide and position the industry to not only fulfill a query and see information in a columnar format, but it provides a great positioning using the whole graph technology to represent information visually. So we're able to use some tools, and in some of the examples I'll show what we're using as Gruff, to show visualization. And then in item number six, we're using FIBO first to harmonize, classify, and then aggregate to fulfill risk data aggregation requirements, to fulfill regulatory risk requirements, to show aggregation across all kinds of different dimensions that the regulators have defined. And then lastly, in item seven, providing a degree of intelligence, of risk intelligence, where we can begin to link information, identify and abstract information through classification, as well as use many of the transitive properties of ontologies to show transitive exposures across different business entities that have been engaged in trades. Moving on to 14, to now just exemplify the example that I gave of a fixed float interest rate swap, what we see here is none other than the molecular composition of a fixed float interest rate swap, where a swap can be tied to two legs. Each leg is tied to a party that's engaged in a trade, typically two parties, but we're just showing one view. And the leg is tied to different amounts called nominal amounts that are the principal for the trade. The legs are tied to either index rates like LIBOR or to fixed rates, and the nominal amounts are tied to currencies. And so we can infer that if a leg is tied to a fixed interest rate, it's a fixed rate leg. We can infer that if it's tied to an index or a floating rate, it's therefore a floating rate leg. And the semantic definition of the sufficient, the necessary and sufficient conditions of a fixed float interest rate swap is that a swap having at least one fixed leg and one float leg, therefore must be a fixed float interest rate swap. So we could then infer that this swap, independently of what it's called, must be a fixed float interest rate swap, which is kind of an interest rate swap. And we can then create relations between the two counterparties, both Acme Incorporated and Trader LLC. So we could define through a rule that these two entities now, which are not physically tied together directly, now can be, as we can infer a new relation we call is trading with, so that we can later query our database and ask who is trading with whom, which is now a very new relation that we could semantically define and enable. So moving on to slide 15, we could say that once we've semantically defined business entities and their relationships based on semantic definitions of ownership and control relations, we can automatically create visual representations of these business entity structures, which is a very, very significant piece of information to start putting a puzzle together of risk, because we could very easily traverse a business ownership hierarchy, both up and down the hierarchy, once we've defined the semantic relations, and once we've defined it in an ontology, it becomes very easy then to create this, which is very difficult to do with application, with relational queries by itself. You typically need an application program to do this. So we're now migrating much of the logic and the knowledge contained in application programs into that single version of the truth, which is the ontology. And we can now start to weave and integrate ontologies together to gain even more power. So now moving on to slide 16, just very briefly, we can start to see this signature of a credit default swap. So many of the objects and the relations here provide an unambiguous conclusion that these objects and relations fulfill the prerequisites, the necessary and sufficient conditions of a credit default swap, and of a particular kind of credit default swap called a single name credit default swap. So here now we can visually reflect what that unique DNA or signature of a CDS is. Moving on to slide 17, we can now begin to combine the knowledge of a ownership hierarchy and the knowledge of different instruments together. So this is simply an example of a query that looks at the ownership hierarchies of business entities, and it looks at the trades of those business entities. It reflects the results of inference and classification of the actual swaps or trades that have occurred. It identifies them and tags them with a particular instrument identifier, and then it further groups them and classifies them into broader categories or classifications. So, for example, down in the middle, we could see that Global Bank has a direct trade with Wall Street Bank of a single name municipal credit default swap contract. So 5-0 has inferred all of that. And we could then look that Global Bank has also a set of descendants or subsidiaries, and actually subsidiary of subsidiaries in the example where Global Bank's child, Big Bank, trades with Wall Street for several different types of credit default swaps. And London Bank is another descendant of Global Bank. Turns out, if you see the prior slide, that Securities Inc. and Trusted Bank are subsidiaries of Big Bank and London Bank, which are subsidiaries of Global Bank. So what we're beginning to do is assemble a very broad-based picture. If we take a look at slide 18, what our intent is to create a web of information that we could use for risk analysis, where we've identified the semantic definition of different types of transactions, swaps, derivatives, loans, etc. We've defined the organizational ownership and control relations between companies. Our intent is to capture the terms and conditions of contracts by being able to interrogate many of these legal contracts called master agreements with many other types of supplemental documents to the contract called credit support annexes and schedules that define the actual legal terms and conditions of the contract that will specify what's permitted with for a trade between party A and party B, and we can semantically define what events constitute default and the semantics of default, the semantics of termination, the semantics of what actions can be taken when these events occur, such as increasing collateral or having transfers or payments. We could define semantically the cash flows and the obligations of each of the entities involved in the trade. And then we could further semantically identify events in the marketplace, such as financial shocks, or certain events that occur daily, such as the downgrading of counterparty credit or the certain impacts to the value of collateral that the counterparties must put up as part of the contract, so that eventually we can get this very holistic picture where we can infer exposures, infer risk, and be able to integrate these interdependencies and be able to define the clearer risk of the party and the counterparty to the counterparty to get a sense of the risk of a portfolio with an institution, and then from a regulatory point of view, the risk of the institution and the risk of many institutions and the risk of countries. So moving on to slide 19, this is just an example of a query we did in 5-0 where we visualized it, where you could see with the solid blue lines, essentially the ownership relations. So Wall Street Bank has an ownership relation to Good Bank, which has an ownership relation to Atlas Bank. And then on the below left, you could see Global Bank defined as the ultimate parent, which is the topmost entity in the holding company, essentially, within a whole subsidiary of companies that owns Big Bank, etc. And in the pink or red lines, this was an inference of, quote, has exposure to, which has a certain semantic meaning. So you could see through this picture that if Wall Street Bank, let's say, failed, there would be an impact, of course, on its subsidiaries, but then an impact upon all the trading partners of Wall Street Bank, such as Trusted Bank on the left, on the bottom right, London Bank in the middle, Global Bank, etc. And then simultaneously, you could see the trading relations between the subsidiaries of those companies. So this is information that could be fed into different algorithms as well as predictive algorithms in order to look at the pattern of relations between entities in order to gain a broader, more holistic sense of risk. So that's what one of the key use cases of FIBO is the management of risk. So moving to slide 20, where we see FIBO being introduced into the financial system is where we believe that FIBO and semantic processing could be introduced unobtrusively into existing legacy infrastructure. That's a huge, huge benefit for companies, first of all, that have interest in semantic processing, as well as, of course, if this becomes mandated by the regulatory community, it would become a requirement. But semantic processing and FIBO does not require a big bang conversion or transformation of legacy systems into a semantic space. If it did, that would be a dead-on-arrival showstopper. But where it becomes attractive is that we can now see the actual utilization of technology available today, where semantic processing can be interleaved as a layer to provide semantic integration and federation functions, where we can access through adapters legacy information in relational stores and Excel spreadsheets and other forms, as well as big data, as well as unstructured forms of data, because we can begin to semantically map it and then semantically represent it and be able to harmonize and homogenize information semantically into a canonical domain model that could then be available for semantic processing and inferencing, as well as Sparkle queries. Therefore, we can gain this integration of information across legacy systems without forcing them to change. That technology is available, and it's becoming very attractive use case for semantic processing. So in the example here, we see that semantic platform inserted into an existing business legacy domain and process, where with that right kind of mapping, which a good part of that now could be automated, can perform semantic processing. And in the case of a regulatory mandate, then the various disparate information in the different silos and warehouses of an organization that has the information that's required to aggregate for regulatory compliance, as well as trade information, transactional information, as long as it all can flow through a common semantic filter or colander to do the work of that harmonization in order to give the institution and the regulatory authorities the sense that this has been validated and classified. Therefore, all information passing through FIBO is good information. And then it will pass through into ultimately the regulatory agencies through other intermediary layers, where the regulators then can perform their analytics for overall global institutional and macro prudential oversight. So last few slides, just to show you a little more of a glimpse into FIBO, this one little snippet. FIBO is highly, highly modular. It's based on a set of ontologies called FIBO foundations that create definitions of financial information that is highly reusable across many of the different use cases, so that we'll be able to import and assemble many of these modular ontologies, as an example, address and postal address and organization and legal person, et cetera, are ones that are part of FIBO Foundation that will be used in many different use cases, from compliance and risk management for derivatives and swaps and loans and other use cases, many that we haven't even thought of. There's many, many other opportunities here. Also, we're leveraging, as you could see, ISO 3166, which are country codes, et cetera. Moving on to slide 22, just to give you a brief view of the fine-grained richness and specificity of taxonomy. So what we try to do is show both polyhierarchical and multifaceted taxonomies of financial instruments, where a given instrument could be logically defined under one taxonomy, and then under another taxonomy, and then under another taxonomy, because you can slice and dice and group the instrument in many, many different perspectives. So here, as an example, where at the very top, we have contract that decomposes into derivatives contracts, that decompose into swap contracts, that decompose into credit default and rate-based swap contracts. And further down, interest rate swap contracts can be broken into two facets. If you want to look at contracts from a currency point of view, we can decompose currency swap contracts into more fine-grained definitions of contracts. And likewise, we can decompose contracts from an interest rate-based perspective into similar fine-grained types of contracts, where within a faceted approach, you have both exchange of logic. So we could see the currency view within an interest rate-based domain, and we could see an interest rate-based set of contracts within a currency domain.
David, this is Ram here. We have a minute or two to wrap up here.
Okay. So I should do that. So on slide 23, we have made full use of AL2DL, and we can leverage the semantic machine-facing definition of a single name credit default swap contract. Likewise, we can provide human annotations associated with that. So everything is fully annotated, so all metadata is within FIBO. Slide 24 is just a brief view of our target roadmap. So end of 2013, FIBO foundations and business entities will be released as a conceptual ontology, and hopefully accompanying that will be reference operational ontologies, and then further on in 2014 and beyond will be derivatives, loans, and securities. Slide 25, just to talk a bit about quality measures in ontologies, beyond what we've done. Yeah, we have some limitations here that and gaps that we are well aware that we need to fulfill. At the level, the quality level to date has simply been the level of the subject matter expertise engaged in building these visual models. So the validation has been extrinsic with the subject matter experts from the financial industry and regulatory community, along with the standardization process through the object management group. And then the operational ontologies, again, creating workable prototypes and proofs of concept with extrinsic validation by subject matter experts and participants in both communities of financial and regulatory, as well as vendors. So that's been the validation of FIBO operational ontologies through that extrinsic level. And then my last slide is the set of tools that will provide that intrinsic quality control, where we still have quite a ways to go to do. Very interested in many of these tools. We've put some of the operational ontologies through the ontology pitfall scanner, more right now as a matter of interest, but something that we want to further formalize. I have a strong interest. I have not touched or used OntoQA and OntoClean and the others that are mentioned here. Would love to get a hold of them and start to perform some of these intrinsic evaluations, because I think that they're all types of controls that we really should complete before we would publish the operational FIBO ontologies as reference ontologies. And then, of course, Mike Bennett, similarly from a conceptual ontology perspective, has been through the hackathon, but there's still, I'm sure, lots of opportunities to exercise these tools. So that has been the conclusion of my presentation. Ram, I will turn it over to you. I don't know if there's time for questions or you need to move on with Dennis, but I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to present to this audience.
Thank you again, David, for taking the time, but we may not have time for questions right now, except for Dennis is going to say a few something very quickly here. Any quick questions that here are, pardon? Gary, go ahead quickly. Is it Gary Gammon? So anyway, Dennis, why don't you go ahead and.
My name is Dennis Wisnowski. I left the Department of Defense last year and have been working with EDMC on the FIBO ever since then. Many of you, and those of you who didn't, who would like to be invited to FIBO Technical Summit that's going to be held the Tuesday and Wednesday of Semtech Biz in San Francisco. That's the third and fourth of August. Some of you got a re-invite while you were sitting here, because our goal was 25 minimum for this summit, and we have 25, but we'd like to have more people. There are five technical areas. They're in the invite, and we're asking, pick those technical areas. Why am I doing this? What I discovered in doing my due diligence for the council was that there's very little really money being spent on far-reaching research. You may disagree with me about that in this financial field, but I'd be happy to argue it. It's nothing compared to what's going on in other places. And what there is done by low universities without a clue as to where this is useful in today's financial world, which to me is every bit as important as what I did in DoD. So I'm inviting not just academics, but also the users of the technology to this summit, and we want to get a roadmap. First off, what's there now we don't know about? Secondly, what can be there in a year? Thirdly, what about going to the feds and asking for a lot of money and putting it behind real-world problems? One of the frustrations, and I had it again this morning, I didn't say anything. My background, first degree, is in physics. The physicist would say, if I could go half the distance to that table, there was a martini there at 6 o'clock each time, I could never get there. But I also have a degree in engineering. I could get there in 3 steps. For all practical purposes, we can solve and have solved many of these problems. What David was showing you in the PowerPoint presentation is not PowerPoint engineering. It is real ontologies going to real instance data using all open source tools, and then visualization is in Grok, which is an open source, but all protege stuff. It's all stuff we can do today. So we have enough of the theory. We want to get on with it. And the purpose for these 2 days out there, 2 half days, afternoon on Tuesday and morning and Wednesday, is to end up with a real roadmap we can stand behind in the financial community. Where's the money? It's there. Not in DOD. It's not in this town anymore. It's not here in this building. It's in the banks. They're making huge amounts of money now again. And we're going to use that to prevent another financial meltdown. Want to be part of this? There's a chance there. If you didn't get an invite, all of you are qualified, I believe. Send me an email. Grab me. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you again. I guess someone, Gary Gammon, you have a question? Pardon? Star 7. Gary, you got to press star 7. It's gone? Okay. Well, that's it then. So we have a break scheduled until 3:30. So you want 15 minutes, okay? So we'll see you back in 15 minutes time here. Okay, thanks a lot again, David.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ram.
Okay, then, so we will be back at 3:30, okay? Or at least 15 minutes. Unless you people are want to stay back. Peter, what do you want to say?
Say it once and then say it again. You can't talk them through the mic.
For anyone who's still on the remote, Peter is asking everyone on the remote audio link to hang up and dial back in because there's a 4-hour limit on the audio bridge, so it may kick you off anyway. So just hang up and dial in again, either now or when the break, in 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, right before we start up again. Thanks.